Today is April 9th, 1974, a Tuesday. The following interview is with Craig Gosden, G-O-S-D-E-N, a member of the Domestic Council. The interview will take place in Mr. Gosden's office on the second floor of the West Wing of the White House. Jack Nesbitt and Terry Good will conduct the interview. And I'll sit here and scribble notes every now and then just to keep track of what's going on, because there had been those rare occasions when this machine didn't function right, and I didn't discover it until after the interview was over with, so
okay.
First of all, when did you join the Domestic Council?
Well, Terry, I was here. I first came to the White House during the summer of 1970 as a White House summer intern. And at that time I worked for Bud Krogh for a period of about 4 months. I then returned to California to finish law school and rejoined the Domestic Council staff in March of 1973.
You were John Campbell's replacement, is that correct?
Well, in a sense I was, in a sense I wasn't. John Campbell's office was located in the basement as an adjunct to the staff secretary's office, and my office has always been located next to Ken Coles, the director of the Domestic Council's office. So in a sense I performed some of the functions that John Campbell used to perform, and I also have performed over the years some others as well. I am still responsible for the paper flow, for the correct routing of all papers that need to be staffed in the White House of a domestic nature. And we are a much less formalized staff secretariat in the Domestic Council than, say, exists in the NSC, which has a much more a formal system with log numbers and a much fancier setup. We're much simpler than that. So I have picked up the staff secretary responsibility for the Domestic Council, which belonged to John Campbell, but I have done a number of special projects also for Ken over the past year that really touch on almost every subject he's worked on. And in that sense, you might call me almost more of a personal aide to Ken himself, and I have worked very closely, as I say, on a number of special projects with other members of the Domestic Council staff. So it's a combination of functions.
Right. Did you have an official title?
Well, officially, I'm a staff assistant on the Domestic Council, and people have referred to me as executive assistant to Ken Cole. I have signed letters that way. I don't know if it's an official title or not, but it's one I've used.
The old title then that I understood that John had, staff secretary.
I've also had too, but the one great difference between Campbell's era as staff secretary and mine is that when John was here, the Domestic Council was much larger. The pre-1972 election, the council was 75 people for a period of about 2.5 years, and now the council is 30 people, so we work a great deal more informally than before. As you will recall, the president asked shortly after the election that his executive office be reduced in size substantially. And my understanding now is that some of the various offices within the president's office complied with that request, and others didn't. Ours happened to be one that complied. He asked the entire White House office to reduce. I think the figure he used in a general sense was about 50%, and I think we made that made that cut almost entirely. So we reduced from about 75 to about 35 presently. So the reason I bring that up is only to explain that John Campbell's role was as staff secretary was more formalized than mine.
The last day on the White House staff will be when? Do you have an idea?
My last day?
Right.
May 3rd. Of 74, which is a Friday.
How was it that you came to join the White House in the summer of 1970, Craig?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. In light of some of the people that have been involved in all this Watergate business over the years, I was a personal friend of Herbert Kalmbach's in California. I had known him for several years before 1970, and we were rather close personal friends and still are. We had talked many times about my perhaps joining his law firm after I finished law school, and I was interested in doing that when one day, in the spring of 1970, we were having lunch at the California Club in Los Angeles, and he asked me if I would have any interest in spending 3 or 4 months as just kind of a summer aide in the White House, and of course my jaw dropped open. I really didn't think that that was that kind of an opportunity was in the realm of possibility. And when he offered me that opportunity, I jumped at it, and I got on an airplane about 3 days later and came back and talked to John Ehrlichman and Ken Cole and Bud Krogh and a number of other people on the domestic council, and that's really how I kind of started. You'll recall that Herb Kalmbach at that time worked very closely with both John Ehrlichman and H.R. Haldeman on a number of projects, and I think he's recommended people before me and also after me, but I'm, I guess, one of the Kalmbach gang, if you want to call it that.
Where do you go after you leave here?
Well, I am, for personal reasons, planning to attend graduate business school in the fall. And I have made a personal decision that I would like to pursue a career in the business sector. And while I have a law degree, and many people have asked why go back to school, now having already completed a law degree, I think that on today's market it is extremely valuable to have some very solid financial tools and training that only a good business school can provide, and so I plan to attend business school in the fall. The reason I'm leaving 4 or 5 months earlier than that is because I have some personal business to attend to in California, among which is a minor operation on my arm, which requires about a month of recovery and time off, so that I really need to take substantial leeway to get that over and done with. I am in no sense leaving because of anything related to what people have referred to as Watergate. As I say, it's just for these personal reasons that I'm leaving. It's my view that I'm 24 years old and unmarried, and it's my view that somebody in my job really shouldn't spend more than about a year or maybe 2 years in this kind of responsibility, and that after you spend that time, I think have reached the peak maybe of your learning curve, and you, from a personal standpoint, have contributed about as much as you can to the president's cause, and in a very small way. And I think from a personal standpoint, you've gained about as much as you can after about a year. So my advice to anybody who follows me in this job is that as they spend about a year or maybe 2 years here, and then move on to other opportunities.
Do you have a replacement at this point?
Well, it hasn't been announced officially yet. I do, and I think it will be Warren Hendricks, although that's not firm, and that could subject to change.
We've done him once or twice, haven't we, already?
Yeah.
I interviewed Warren when he was over there with
Finch.
Finch, yeah, yeah. So, and I noticed that he had joined the domestic council. I didn't know what his role was.
Right. Well, he's worked in the area of intergovernmental affairs, the Office of Intergovernmental Affairs, which is dealings with mayors and governors and locally elected officials.
When you came back in March of 73, you began working then for Ken Cole.
Ken Cole, and at that time, Ken had recently been promoted to become the executive director of the Domestic Council, and he retained his title of deputy assistant to the president, which he had had, I guess, for several years. His role has evolved substantially now. As you know, John Ehrlichman, who was his supervisor at that time and the assistant to the president for domestic affairs, resigned and was replaced a month later by Melvin Laird, who took the title counselor to the president. And then, as Mr. Laird spent about 9 months here, when he departed to return to private life, Ken Cole was then promoted to be the assistant to the president for domestic affairs. So we have moved offices 5 times in a period of 12 months, which must be some kind of a record around here, although I don't know that it is, because everybody moves a good deal. But it's been very interesting to work with three very different kinds of people, in the sense that we worked under John Ehrlichman, then under Melvin Laird, and finally under Ken Cole. And very interesting experience.
What type of work were you doing when you came in March of 73 under Cole? More or less the same thing that you have been doing ever since?
Yes. The kinds of things that I do, you mean when I started here in 73?
Right, right. Has there been any change?
Well, not really. The interesting thing from my point of view about my job is that the projects change almost on a day-to-day basis, because as he is responsible for the total range of domestic affairs, there is an opportunity to work on a wide range of things with him. That they have included an enormous number of presidential briefing papers, written briefing papers, which, as you know, the president requests for every one of his own meetings, and which, if they concern a meeting in the domestic area, Ken Cole is really responsible for providing him, and I have done the writing of a good deal of those. I've written papers for briefing papers on a wide variety of topics in the domestic area for Vice President Agnew and also for Vice President Ford, as well as other members of the White House staff, including General Haig. My job, in a sense, then, is really to provide the staff support, the immediate staff support, for Ken Cole directly. He, of course, reviews everything that I do and corrects it, and oftentimes criticizes it rather severely. But it's fun, and it's been a great learning experience, as well as, I think, contributing in a small way to how things work around here.
So your input has been more; it has been substantive, by all means. It has not simply been a matter of making sure that this paper goes to that staff member and getting it back on time.
Well, no, it's been both, and that is a part of the I picked up really both functions. One from John Campbell, which was the function of making sure everything is routed properly, and the other function just is a result of my being located right here next to Ken Cole immediately, and having and he having the necessity for somebody to provide the kind of substantive staff support that's necessary for him to carry out his day, his official responsibilities to other members of the senior staff and to the president. So it's been both. I must say that the substance side, is just from a personal point of view, is much more interesting. But the operation side, of course, is critical to the running of the office of the president. Somebody's got to do that, and I'm very happy to have been able to contribute what I have to that process as well.
Have there been any long-running projects that you have been involved in a substantive way that you might want to mention there?
Well,
some members of the staff are assigned to environment, health, welfare, education, what have you.
Right. Well, the answer to that is probably there are no long-running projects in the sense that I have responsibility on the domestic council for one given area over a period of a year. That's not my function, really. I suppose that we have five associate directors on the domestic council who not only outrank me in terms of hierarchy, but also are assigned day-to-day responsibility or overall long-term responsibility for various areas of domestic affairs. I suppose you could describe my function as more of a firefighting kind of function when an immediate problem or an immediate need for some staff support or some staff paper arises in any area of domestic affairs, even if it is an area that is covered by one of the associate directors. Often Ken will ask me to provide that paper so in a sense, not only do I lend a hand to him, but also to the associate directors, the other five associate directors on the domestic council as well, which is fine. It's a very loose, unstructured kind of relationship. I think Ken and I have a good working relationship, and that's what's made my job successful from my own point of view. And it's easy to carry out my function because of that close personal working relationship. Without that, my job it would be very difficult to achieve or carry out.
Would it be possible for you to give us an idea of what a typical day for you might be?
Sure.
When you arrive, how
very
you handle
easily.
The various assignments of the day.
Our day typically begins with a 7:30 meeting in the Roosevelt Room, which is chaired by Ken Cole and attended by the associate directors of the Domestic Council, the associate directors of the Office of Management and Budget, and the key members of Bill Timmons' congressional relations staff. And that meeting generally lasts about, I attended also, as almost a recording secretary, as the person who must be sure that all of the projects which Ken will assign at that meeting, or all the items that arise at that meeting, are kept on track, in a sense, or are carried out as Ken asked that they be for that day or for the rest of that week. That 7:30 morning meeting is a coordination meeting, and it's a very valuable tool to structure the day for the Office of Management and Budget and the Domestic Council, which, as everybody knows, work hand in glove, or optimally work hand in glove. There's always some institutional pressures between the two as to who's doing what, but they complement each other, and necessarily so. So that 7:30 meeting, which where I begin my day, lasting till about 8 o'clock, is a coordination meeting, and I try to follow up on a good deal of that coordination and make sure that it's happening. The things that are expected to be happening are. At 8 o'clock, I generally eat breakfast for about 20 minutes to a half hour. At about 8:30, I return to my office and generally spend about 15 minutes with Ken, asking him what he would like done that day or what needs doing, and also reporting to him on what happened the previous afternoon. In terms of not only what our staff is doing, but in terms of whatever other information you pick up by osmosis around the building as to what everybody else is doing, too. I personally think that's a very valuable function that somebody can provide to somebody like the assistant to the president. He will receive one level of information about what's going on at his senior staff meeting chaired by General Haig at 8:30. and another level of information from people like myself as to what the tom-toms in the rest of the building are saying that morning. And that 15 minutes or 20 minutes at 8:30 is just a way of keeping him informed what people not only on our staff but at a lower level around the rest of the building might be saying or thinking too. It's rumor, it's often gossip, but this is a big staff, and there's a tendency for people to compartmentalize their work and often not work together as well as they might. And so anytime you can kind of pick up shreds of information here and there and bring them to the assistant for domestic affairs is valuable, I think, to him, and I think he finds it so. So that takes me really to about 9 o'clock, and starting at about 9, I generally will begin making a long series of telephone calls that might take an hour and a half sometimes, really following up items that arose at the 7:30 meeting and just getting a feel for where they stand and for what people are doing to execute and to begin thinking about information items that arose at 7:30. Also, I generally sit in, again, as kind of a recording secretary on most of Ken's substantive meetings all day. He probably will have 3 or 4 half-hour meetings scheduled every hour or so, or maybe more than that on a busy day. And I'll sit in on most of those, taking notes and often writing memorandums for the file as to exactly what happened. And sometimes contributing if I've got something to contribute. It's a necessary function for somebody to be that, perform that recording function, and I do it for Ken. There might be, at any given time, there might be a special project or two that I might be working on in terms of a briefing paper for some meeting that might take place in the next couple of days, or gathering some briefing information for somebody on the staff, even the president or the vice president. And I'll try to squeeze some work on that in between phone calls and Ken's meetings. As you can see from what I've said so far, that it's an interesting process for me, because you are working on a number of different projects all in one morning. 4 or 5 different topics will arise in all in the morning. That takes me probably up till lunchtime. At about lunchtime, I generally see Kathy Jensen, who is the girl responsible for the minute-to-minute operations of our staff secretariat, and we go over a number of routing items to make sure that everything in the domestic affairs area in terms of the paper flow is operating properly, and that the right people in the building, the right senior staff people, are reading and watching and making sure they see all the paperwork that they should, so that the president can have the balanced advice of all of his senior advisors that are appropriate on any given topic. My job in that sense is to make damn sure that everything's coordinated well, that everybody who should look at a paper does look at a paper, because the one thing that has been kind of a cardinal rule around here since I've been here is that the president demands that, to the extent possible, he is presented with balanced options, with a balanced viewpoint that on any given problem that represents the work of all of his senior advisors who know anything or who can contribute anything to that particular problem. So my job is never to keep things, issues or paper from anybody, but it is to ensure that it gets to everybody, that it receives as wide a dissemination as possible. That generally takes about 30 minutes. It's not a very complicated process, and Kathy really can make sure that all the paper goes to the right people after a while herself, but I just like to check it to make sure that it happens right, and I think that that is probably the greatest strength of the Nixon staff system, the necessity and the requirement that was laid down around here, I guess, by Bob Haldeman when he first set up this system, that everybody on the White House staff and throughout the departments and agencies who have a valuable input on a problem, give it so that the president has the benefit of more than just one person's advice or two people's advice, and so that he has the value of everybody's advice, and he is not, and his thinking, his own personal decision making, is not colored by the biases of one or two of his, perhaps of his closest advisors. That's the system. It doesn't always work that well. That's how it works in theory, and we try to make it work that way, but of course it breaks down all the time. But that's a function of having a big White House staff and trying to run a whole government. The afternoon is generally an unstructured time for me. Again, I will make a number of phone calls to find out where things stand. I will attend the rest of Ken's meetings that day. I will often ride to Capitol Hill and with him or with one of the associate directors and sit in on a congressional meeting, a congressional legislative strategy meeting with Republicans, members of the House, members of the Senate, sometimes with Democrats there, trying to hammer out a position on legislation. My role there, again, is more of a recording secretary's role. We have three afternoons a week. We spend about an hour in a smaller staff meeting with just the staff, the entire professional staff of the Domestic Council, and that is a coordination meeting, again, to make sure that Ken is up to speed on where everything stands and what everybody's doing. I spend a good deal of my time in the afternoon sometimes talking to press people who want to see Ken. I like to get a feel for why they want to see him, what they want to talk about. It's not a way to try to trip up the press or mislead them in any sense, or it's just a way to kind of prepare Ken so that when a member of the press or the media comes in and wants to interview him, or on or off the record, he has some idea of what it is they want to talk about so that he can be prepared. It's very difficult for a man in his job to keep track of the enormous numbers of domestic issues which he has to do, which he has to be dealing with at any given time. So by preparing him in advance, you give him some lead time to prepare, and it is helpful, I think, not only to Ken and to the president in the sense of getting the president's message across if Ken is adequately prepared, but it's also beneficial to the press man who really does want the true story and he doesn't want to waste Ken's time or his own time. So I talk to a good many press people in the afternoon. We generally save that time to return press calls. I don't know why, it's just kind of been traditional ever since John Ehrlichman was here. He and Todd Hullin, who performed similar functions to those I performed, did the same kind of thing. Late in the afternoon, we will go over the day's, Ken and I will go over the day's paper, which has built up maybe to as many as 40 or 50 items, sometimes as few as 10 or 15. Memorandums, briefing papers, letters that from key congressional people who need an answer to a particular problem. All this Ken has to see and be aware of, even though he has five associate directors who oftentimes carry the burden and the responsibility for answering much of this correspondence and making sure that the necessary papers are prepared for the president or whoever is in need of a decision paper or an information memorandum at any given time. That process generally takes an hour. Sometimes we watch sorted news shows when we do that, and Carol Patrick, who's Ken's secretary for 5 years and as outstanding a secretary as I've ever run across in my life, often sits in on that meeting, and after I'm through or before I begin covering the substance mail of the day, she will cover Ken's personal correspondence, his invitations, etc. That's kind of a once-a-day process, sometimes twice a day, but we very seldom skip a day when Ken doesn't come right up to date on what's going on in the area and what our guys are doing, and at least come up to date as far as the paper is, the paperwork, the internal paperwork of the White House is concerned. We work generally till about 7 o'clock at night, sometimes a little later, sometimes much later. Rarely have I ever left before 6:30, and I generally leave, as I say, around 7 or 7:30. It's a full day. It's a long day, and but a very interesting day, as I say, because it covers so many different topics throughout any given time.
So your contacts with the White House staff will include the associate directors of the Domestic Council and perhaps some of their staff people.
Some of their staff people, and also wide-ranging contacts around the rest of the building. There is a number of differences between the way Ehrlichman and Cole have worked, and Ehrlichman, Laird, and Cole have worked. Ken, I think, is a great deal more open than Ehrlichman was, in the sense that John used to talk on the phone very rarely. He spent a good deal more time, personal time, with the president than Ken does now. And as a result, it was almost impossible to reach John Ehrlichman by telephone. Todd Hullin, therefore, returned almost all of John Ehrlichman's telephone calls. And then at the end of the day, he would go in and cover 20 or 30 calls for Ehrlichman in a period of 20 or 30 minutes that might have taken Ehrlichman 2 or 3 hours had he tried to return them all himself. Cole, on the other hand, returns many more of his phone calls than Ehrlichman does. I don't really know the reason why he doesn't spend as much time with the president. I think it's also his style to communicate more directly with people, other people on the White House staff, than it was Ehrlichman's style to do that. And so I don't return all of Ken's calls, but I would say I return 50% of his calls. That will include calls from congressional staff people. It will include calls from anybody on the White House staff who is not of a senior level, that is, not an assistant to the president or not an agency director or a cabinet secretary or a cabinet undersecretary. Basically, all assistant secretaries, I'll return those calls. It's nothing hard and firm. It's just something that Ken will take a long list of his own messages and hand me half of them, and he'll keep half of them. It's just very informal, and so my contacts in that sense are quite wide-ranging at that level,
Including OMB.
Including OMB, yes, especially OMB, where, as I say, I've said before, we work very closely with them on a number of issues. You cannot make a substantive decision on domestic policy without considering the budget aspects of that decision. Those are in themselves policy decisions. So we work really closest with OMB of anybody in the building, and so I will deal with a great many associate directors of OMB on a regular basis, and a great many staff people. OMB is much bigger than we are. I find myself talking to a lot of people in OMB that I've never heard of before, only because they have 500 people and we've got 20 professionals. So, but it's so I talk to many people in OMB.
I don't suppose this job has given you much opportunity to travel, unless Ken was traveling, you would go with him?
No. What happened was, Ken, for the first, I've been here about 14 months or so, for the first 6 to 9 months that I was here, Ken did not do a great deal of traveling. His role was still evolving. He was still the man on the inside rather than the man out front. He had not been promoted to an assistant to the president yet. As a result, he did not do a lot of personal traveling himself. Also, I must say in all candor, the Watergate situation developed and broke publicly almost simultaneously with my arrival at the White House, so that The first couple of months I was here, things were quite busy. But then for the next 6 months or so, carrying really through the November period, I suppose, or the December period, the fall of 1973, things slowed down remarkably. I'm not saying that the government came to a standstill or that the White House staff came to a standstill, but there's no question that things, the level of activity, and it's just a perception, it's nothing you can really put your finger on, the level of activity, in my opinion, diminished, I would say, about 50%. So that that Ken was not out speaking, was not out talking as much as he has in the last 6 months. I don't think that the reasons that he personally wasn't doing that are not because he was stunned or flabbergasted by Watergate or anything, but things slowed down. It was a combination of factors. Don't forget that in the summer you have really finished budget season. The fiscal year has been completed. All our new legislation in the State of the Union, which comes in January or February of the year, has been submitted to the Congress. All the legislation that is to go to the Congress by way of special message has been sent by about June or even earlier of any given year, so that for the next 3 or 4 months during the summer, there is a natural slowdown of policy activity on the domestic council. So a combination of factors prevented Ken from traveling through the end of 1973. As he was promoted to an assistant to the president in 1974, he began doing a great deal of traveling. And the reason he began doing that traveling was very simple. He, when promoted, did not have nearly the public stature, the public reputation, the perception of being, if you don't mind the colloquialism, a public heavy that Melvin Laird had from spending 30 years on Capitol Hill and John Ehrlichman had from spending 5 years as a close associate of the president day in and day out. So the Ken's traveling was a definite plan on the part of the White House communicators, the chief of staff, to make sure that the public began knowing a little more about Ken Cole, what he stood for, what he did. It was a way of making sure that Ken became known. So he did do a good deal of traveling for the next 3 or 4 months, and I have not traveled with him. He has spent really 3 days out of every week on the road, and he has taken Warren Hendricks with him, because Warren Hendricks is a real first-class professional when it comes to advancing a trip or making all the on-the-road travel preparations for an out-of-town appearance. And I really did not have any previous experience as an advance man and really didn't want to do it, frankly. It wasn't what interested me, and Warren is the best in the business at it, and so he's been traveling on a regular basis with Ken. Ken traveled for about 4 months. That has now tailed off substantially. I think it may pick up again in the next couple of months. It's very difficult to say. I think he goes in cycles. He gets tired of traveling. But I think Warren will continue to travel with him and also will try to do my job even though he'll be traveling with Ken.
All of these meetings that you've sat in on as a recording secretary, you were probably taking some sort of a note or notes and polishing them up in the form of a memo or something. That would lead me to believe that a good deal of your activities would be rather well documented in one form or another.
Yeah, they are. I have substantial cron files, which I have not reviewed as I begin preparations to leave the staff now. I just haven't had an opportunity to review those yet, and I will as time permits.
Hopefully you would leave those here.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
A very valuable asset to understanding your role. So those cron files would include perhaps memos as well as letters as well as resumes of a telephone call or a conversation.
Right, they will. I also have handwritten notes that are not nearly as formalized, and I have a great many of those, and I also plan to leave those here, too. I don't know if they're legible to anybody really but me, but maybe they are someday. Somebody might thumb through them.
It just may be that that would be the thing that we would look through, and if we had questions, that would be the excuse we would need to call you up 5 years from now and hope for another session.
Well, I'm, of course, happy to help you guys. I think it's very valuable to, I think that Nixon people have tried, you all have tried harder than any other president to really make a sincere effort to record with as great a degree of accuracy as possible the activities of this administration, and I think it's of enormous historical importance, and hope that every future president tries to do make as sincere an effort as you all have.
Where could we reach you 5 years from now, Craig, or 10 years from now? Do you have any sort of a permanent mailing address?
I do. What I'd like to do is give you the mailing address of my mother and father's residence. And the reason I give you that is because they have lived in the same house for 20 years, and I imagine that, as health permitting, they will live in the same house for 20 more years. And that address is 720 North Alpine Drive, Beverly Hills, California. That telephone number, which also hasn't changed for about 20 years, is area code 213-276-2552. I think that's probably a good bet, is the easiest way to track me down at any time in the future.
We could perhaps also track you through the California Bar Association if it came to
Yes,
that.
Yes, I think very easily. I stay in contact with them. I am proud to be a member of the State Bar of California, and so they'll always know what my permanent address is.
Who has been your secretary for the period of time you've been here?
Well, my secretary has changed once since I've been here. My secretary for the first 6 months was a gal by the name of Bobby Vidler, V-I-D-L-E-R. She left to get married in about August of 73, after about 6 months with me, and since then my secretary has been a gal by the name of Jane McDonough, M-C-D-O-N-O-U-G-H.
She will stay?
Jane, I think, will also leave the White House when I do. I'm not really sure of that yet. I don't think her plans are all that firm, but I'd hope she can stay because she makes somebody a good secretary around here.
Have there been any newspaper or magazine articles that have discussed your input or activities in any sort of detail?
Not really in any sort of detail. There have been a number of National Journal articles written on the Domestic Council which have talked about my role in passing, and as they were focusing on perhaps the associate directors of the council and, of course, on Ken. There have been a number of profiles in newspapers and in magazines over the past 4 months, as Ken has worked very hard to become better known, that have mentioned again my name in passing as a executive assistant or as a personal aide to Ken. But in terms of discussing my role in any detail, no, there haven't been.
So these newspaper people that have talked with you prior to talking with Ken have zeroed in more on his role.
Right, and I think those were really the informal ground rules. They were certainly there to talk to Ken and write about Ken and not about me, and I think that's natural and the way we tried to keep it, so that by working with Ken and writing about Ken, I think that the president was served and helped well, and so he didn't focus on me at all, if possible.
Did you have any contact with private interest groups? You've mentioned your frequent and regular contacts with people within the White House, OMB and Capitol Hill. Ken's role at one point was very much with the local and state government areas. Did you get involved in?
Well, Ken's role is still, he is still the man who the president has given overall responsibility to for communicating with state and locally elected officials. Now, he has a man, Jim Falk, on our staff, who is an associate director, who has minute-to-minute or day-to-day responsibility for doing that. But Ken really is the guy that still returns all of the senior governor's calls. By that I mean Reagan, Rockefeller, etc. And Jim Falk handles most of the other governors. Ken will also talk to any given number of mayors in a week, maybe two or three of major cities. He is working now on a regular basis with Mayor Beam, the newly elected mayor of New York, for instance, on the mass transit problems that New York is facing in kind of a unique way. But I have talked to a number of elected officials over the past 12 months. Generally, it's interesting. They generally call Jim Falk when they need day-to-day help, but if they run into any sort of an emergency, they always like to talk to Ken about that, or if they're coming in to see the president about something, they'd like to talk to Ken about that particular visit. And of course, he sits in on all those meetings with the president and the governor or the locally elected official. For instance, I will recall in the last couple of weeks, I talked to the governor of South Carolina about the problem he was having on Hilton Head Island, where a bridge had a tugboat had run into a bridge, knocking the bridge out that connects the mainland to Hilton Head Island and stranding 15,000 or so millionaires, if you can refer to them in that sense. And he needed some immediate assistance from the Corps of Engineers, and so he, of course, turned to Ken in that instance. Ken wasn't here. I talked to him, and we got the Corps down there looking at the problem right away, and we got him some quick help to help all his friends over on Hilton Head.
So by and large, your contacts with state and local people would be on a hit-and-miss type?
Hit-and-miss, irregular basis, not a great many. You might talk to one or two a week, probably, at the most. Generally, they would be governors. We try as much as possible to route all of those calls over to Jim Falk's office, unless the locally elected official insists on speaking to Ken. And that's just because there are so many locally elected officials. When you think of all the mayors in the country, all the county officials, and even all the governors of the 50 states, that's a lot of people. And so we have a mechanism set up, Jim Falk and Warren Hendricks, to handle those people on a regular basis rather than trying to handle them all here in this office.
Craig, that hits, I think, on all of the basic questions that I wanted to touch on. Jack, is there anything that I overlooked that you want to pursue further?
No. Pretty well ran through.
Let me just ask a question. One of the interesting things that's happened to me over the years, I have been a friend of Dave Eisenhower's for, I don't know, just a personal friend for 10 years. We spent a lot of time growing up together. We went to Europe together one summer, and I've just spent a good deal of time with Dave and Julie over the past year. And I don't want to talk about that in any personal way, but I don't know if that's interesting even to this kind of a.
I'm glad you raised that. If
of a session.
Can't phrase any question to you on that, but have you continued to have rather regular contact with him since you've been here at the home?
Oh, yes, a very, very frequent contact, in fact. And I don't want to, as I say, talk in any personal sense about it other than to say that we've been very good friends. And I was an usher in Dave's wedding, and so we go back a long way. It's just been, to me personally, fascinating to spend a good deal of time with Dave and Julie and look at the presidency and the office of the president and the institution from the eyes of two of the young people in his family, as well as from the perspective of a staff person. And often those two perspectives are miles apart, and you can look at the same circumstance or happening very differently if you listen to if you listen to Dave or Julie talk about it, or if you listen to people here on the staff. It's fascinating. But I don't know if this is really appropriate or not. So
I'm glad you raised it. I can visualize perhaps coming back to you in the future, whatever we deal with, let's say the first family, as a family, you might be a very valuable source of information from that unique perspective that you enjoy.
Well, again, whenever you want to do it in the future, I'd be happy to do it. I've been privileged to spend actually quite a bit of time with David and Julie, and even with the first family at Camp David and elsewhere over the
I have the impression that we end up having to try and talk to Secret Service people, and obviously they're going to be rather tight-lipped, and the contacts are going to be very, very formal.
Right. We would really hope that at some appropriate time, if we get into a full bore oral history program, we would come back and really get into
that's what I figured.
What might be sensitive now and would not be perhaps in 5 years, and things that would really contribute to future research value at the Nixon Library, so that a printed transcript then would be a substitute for a researcher who can never quite get to enough of these people to do personal interviews. Hopefully our interviews would have the questions and answers that would provide a lot of the information.
Well, come back to me, because I think I can provide some interesting and colorful anecdotes. I mean, really colorful anecdotes about the kids and about maybe even the first family in a way. And I think it's better to do it in a couple of years when the president's out of office. And
we've found that that's certainly true. And quite often when they begin one of these interviews, someone is rather hesitant because they're not sure if we intend to ask them questions that would evoke an evaluation or an opinion on their part. And that's why we try and put their mind at ease immediately by assuring them that that's not our intention at this point.
Right.
Knowing full well.
But more valuable to you if the people will talk.
That's true.
Well, anytime. I'd love to talk to you again. And this is a great, I think, a very valuable thing you guys are doing. I hope it's a big success someday.
Well, so
I think
far.
It will be. It will be a great record for you.
Say, we have this little statement.
It says, I have left the following files with, and I assume that would be Ken Cole for current office use, right?
Right, right.
We've adopted the same checkout procedures on the domestic council the White House has, so nobody gets their last paycheck and can leave the building and all that stuff unless they've done all these things. So I assume that